Welcome to Leading Lines, a podcast from Vanderbilt University. I'm your host, Derek Brough, the director of the Vanderbilt Center for Teaching. In this podcast, we explore creative, intentional, and effective uses of technology to enhance student learning, uses that we hope point the way to the future of educational technology in college and university settings. In this episode, we talk with Akos Ladeshi, professor of computer engineering and a senior research scientist at the Institute for Software Integrated Systems here at Vanderbilt University. Akos is the lead developer for NetzBlox, a graphical programming language designed to introduce novice programmers from middle school to college to networked programming. Students can use NetzBlox to create simple multiplayer games and to build apps that interface with publicly available datasets. Akos is interviewed by Cliff Anderson, Associate University Librarian for Research and Learning, and a member of our Leading Lines team. Cliff and Akos discuss the past, present, and future of NetzBlox and explore how graphical programming languages like NetzBlox, Snap, and Scratch are changing computer science education. One terminology note, Akos uses the term blocks-based coding to refer to programming languages like NetzBlox and Scratch, in which graphical interfaces allow users to drag blocks of instructions together to create relatively complex programs.
Hi, this is Cliff Anderson. I am the Associate University Librarian for Research and Learning and a Professor of Religious Studies at Vanderbilt, and I'm here with Akos Ladeshi, Professor of Computer Engineering, Director of Graduate Studies in Computer Science, and also Senior Research Scientist at the Institute for Software Integrated Systems at Vanderbilt. Welcome, Akos.
Thank you.
So today we're going to be talking broadly about the area of computational thinking, but in particular about a new tool that Akos and his team have put together that is called NetzBlox. So one of the things I think before we even get into what NetzBlox is to talk about how you became interested in this area of blocks-based programming and model-based computer systems.
Yes, thank you. So yeah, I took a really long and roundabout way of getting where I am right now. So when I started my graduate studies in the early 90s, our main research area was this model-based engineering or what we call model-integrated computing. And the idea was that there was very little modeling done in software engineering at the time and in computer science, so we tried to bring in a more disciplined approach to creating software systems. And the idea was to create domain-specific modeling languages. These are graphical modeling languages to software engineering. And the reason to do domain-specific and not one universal modeling language, because software is being used in all kinds of different domains. And it just to us, it never made sense to just try to create one modeling language to capture all. So in different engineering disciplines, in different science disciplines, there are already existing modeling formalisms, so why not kind of create an environment and the modeling language that fits that domain well? So that was our idea, and we created a series of tools where you can actually define a modeling language also through graphical means, and this environment would configure itself to support that domain-specific modeling language. And there are actually existing examples of domain-specific design environments already being widely used. One example would be LabVIEW, or Simulink Stateflow from MathWorks. And these are graphical languages helping engineers create signal processing systems, control algorithms, or laboratory experiments. But of course, if you don't have a big enough market, it would be really expensive to create a tool just for a small market. So instead, we had this generic tool that was really easy to configure to create a modeling language, and through a tool support and APIs, write code generators. So part of the system would be modeled with these graphical tools, and the code would be automatically generated. And we have actually many successful applications of this techniques throughout the years.
So in a way, this connects, if I understand correctly, with your interest in blocks-based programming or graphical programming. I'm not sure which term you prefer.
Right. So that early part of my career was really based on modeling. So we didn't try to model the software. We tried to model the system and then generate the software from there. But when I started teaching introductory programming with MATLAB to freshmen, non-major freshmen actually, non-computer science majors, I noticed that coming with zero programming background and learning a text-based programming language was a pretty big jump for many of the students. So actually that's when I started to introduce one of the blog-based programming languages, Scratch, as just for the first 2 weeks of the semester, and the students actually liked it, and they kind of it helped them with the initial learning curve, and then we switched to MATLAB. And that's how my interest in blog-based programming grew, and so this model-based approach and then the blog-based kind of came together.
We were talking before we got started that graphical-based computing languages have actually been around for a while now. In fact, Logo, which was created in 1967 when paired with Turtle Graphics, has been used for a long time as a tool to teach computational thinking in classrooms. I remember using that in the 1980s. And what's fun is that my son is now using it when he's reading Gene Lwin Young's and Michael Holmes' series Secret Coders that uses Logo programming to teach basic computer science concepts. Especially fun is the fact that at the end of the book, there's a program listing that he has to type in to get a secret code. And I remember doing the exact same thing in the 1980s when I'd get magazines. And to learn a game, I'd type in the code listing at the end of the magazine and then see how it worked, which was a great way to learn about computer programming. But in any case, you mentioned Scratch. Can you talk a little bit about how you use Scratch in that course and what you found its limitations to be?
Right. So as I said, I started teaching MATLAB, and it took us basically a month to get to loops and if statements, right? Because it's just more complicated. The syntax is harder. And then I started looking for ways of easing this transition from no background to programming. And I ran across Scratch, and it was really amazing because it was so intuitive. It was really a great way of trying to hide the syntax or not get bogged down with the syntax, but actually think about the algorithms, the computational thinking, and not worry about what you have to type and why does the compiler complain and stuff like that. So I really like Scratch. It was really intuitive. And basically, when I started doing it, we were able to together write our first program with loops and if statements during the very first class. So it didn't take us a month to go there. It took us half an hour to go to some of the most important concepts in programming. So that was really great. And actually, my philosophy is that to learn programming is you have to do it. You just come to a lecture and listen to what I'm saying. You're not going to learn programming. So immediately, the first week I assign them a sizable project, they have to do it in Scratch. So basically, the first week they have to start programming, and it worked out very well.
And it probably also, there's a sort of fear when you're facing a blank page like any writer has when you just don't even know where to start. And Scratch gives you that palette and lets you just drag things on and experiment. It's just much easier to begin, I think.
Exactly. And now that I'm teaching in various schools in Nashville, not just at Vanderbilt, but various middle schools and high schools, some of the feedback I get is exactly this. It's so much easier to do it because I can just see what's available and start using it like Lego blocks and not just have to start with a blank editor or screen.
Right, exactly, yeah. Now, if I understand correctly, your project builds on Snap, which is a variant of Scratch that introduces more powerful computer science constructs. Can you talk a little bit about how Snap advances the block-based programming paradigm from Scratch?
Right, so I think Scratch is great, and it's great for, I think, the best demographic is middle schoolers, I would say, elementary school and middle school. But once you get to high school, and of course college freshmen like I did, some of the students would consider it it's too childish or it's too limiting and things like that. So Snap is actually great because it added some important and more advanced concepts to what Scratch supports. So for example, recursion or full-fledged functions called custom blocks and some higher order functions. And there are some features of Snap that actually I've never used even now.
I see it allows you to do continuations, which is a kind of unique feature in Scheme, which it's pretty advanced.
Right. Basically, I think what they call is it's a graphical version of Scheme. Yeah. That's exactly what they try to do. So that is great. But of course, there was one huge advantage over Scratch, which is it's open source and it's implemented in JavaScript. So we were actually able to just take that open source code base and build NetsBlocks on top of it.
So let's come to NetsBlocks then. NestBlocks, as I understand it, has two major innovations. One is message passing and the other is distributed programming. Can you talk about why you added those two features in particular as your innovations on Snap?
Right. So if you go back this time just one decade, so my 2 decades ago I was working with model integrated computing. A decade ago I started working with distributed programming, specifically wireless sensor networks. So I really like these two areas, and then when I started using Scratch and then Snap, I realized that even though Snap is much more advanced, it's still kind of limiting because it still puts you in a sandbox, which is the stage where your turtle graphics objects can move around and whatnot. You are still limited to that sandbox. So the idea was, these days, any application or almost any application you use on your phone or on your laptop is networked, right? You go to Google Maps, you listen to Pandora, you go to Netflix, Facebook, everything is networked. So I thought that was a really big missing piece from these block-based languages to kind of open up the internet. So how can you do that? And then we started brainstorming with my team, and we came up with these two abstractions. One is message passing, so that actually you can pass messages between two computers, and our goal was basically to enable multiplayer games. So kids play multiplayer games all the time. How about making it easy for them to create multiplayer games? That should spike their interest. So that was one reason we introduced message passing. And the other main concept we introduced, what we call remote procedure calls, which allows you to call some kind of functionality, some kind of procedure on a remote machine. And that remote machine, in our case, is our own server. And there, we basically interface to a set of public domain databases or data sources on the internet, such as Google Maps, weather, USGS earthquake data, or the Sloan Digital Sky Server for astronomy images, the Open Movie Database, and a bunch of others. So now, the kids can write programs which can access these data sources. And for example, in a 5-minute video, I show how you can create an interactive weather map where you have the entire world show up as the background, as a Google Map background, and you can click anywhere and it shows you the current conditions anywhere on the world. And it literally takes 5 minutes to create that application with NestBlocks.
And I think it's wonderful, especially that you provided so many different examples so that people can get started, sort of see how the code works and then see what the code is, exactly what the blocks are, and then take it from there.
Right, and then the whole thing is obviously iterative in the sense that these kinds of applications, these network applications that get data from the server, start out easy, just like this weather application. But of course, you can get more and more complicated. When you get to the message passing, again, you can do some relatively simple applications like implement a quick chat room or text messaging or something like that. But once you get to the multiplayer games, now that's a relatively big jump because now you have to think about distributed algorithms, right? So it's much more complicated than just a simple algorithm. Now two machines running in parallel, really in parallel, has to coordinate and communicate with each other. So that's where kind of the ceiling is really raised for learning more advanced concepts.
Yeah, I would say that the large majority of computer programmers in the professional world have difficulty with those concepts.
Right, except NestBlocks makes them a whole lot simpler than you would have to do it in Java or anything else. And these are the kinds of games we support, more like either board games or games where there is some limited amount of animation. Of course, you're not going to implement a first-person shooter game in NestBlocks because it's just this is not what it was designed for.
Another area that's caught the attention of the educational technology community are microcontrollers. And I know there have been people developing blocks-based programming languages for controllers like the Arduino. For example, RGBlock, MBlock, or S4A. Have you thought about developing a version of NestBlocks to use on the Arduino?
Yes, definitely. So actually, there is a version of Snap called Snap for Arduino. And the developer of that version and the Snap developers are working relatively closely. And by the way, we are also working with that same team closely because they really like what we are doing. So, so yes, definitely, that's an interesting topic. What we actually would like to do is even better. which is we want to really introduce robotics. So there are, of course, already existing robots that you can program with these block-based languages. What NetBlocks can bring to the table is actually using multiple robots. So now the robots actually can communicate with each other, and you can actually implement a robot team-based applications, not just programming a simple robot. So
that sounds fantastic, like great fun.
Yeah, so that's our next plan.
Well, I guess you're just leading me into my next question, which is, where do you plan to go next with NetBlocks? I know you've received some grant funding at this point, but I also get the sense that this is just the beginning for you. Can you talk about some of your plans for the future apart from robotics?
Yeah, so that's right. And first of all, I'd like to thank the TIPS program of Vanderbilt that actually kickstarted the whole thing. And then once we had that going and we had an early prototype, we were actually able to convince the National Science Foundation to give us some more funding to develop NetBlocks into a full-fledged environment. So yes, robotics is definitely one area we'd like to look into. The other one is porting NetBlocks applications to iPhones and Android phones and then give access to the sensors there. So now students will be able to write applications that use the motion sensor, accelerometer, or camera even on the phone. So that would be another interesting extension. And another probably longer term is actually but creating a more advanced version of NetBlocks that instead of a visual programming language uses Python. So again, the networking part is still fairly problematic, and it's only taught in computer science in college level classes and not even freshman college level classes, right? So probably junior level. So what if we could have a Python-based environment that exposes high school students to networking? So the more advanced students who kind of find the block-based approach kind of limiting still, they could actually graduate to Python and still use these data sources and the message passing kind of abstraction so that they can write distributed applications.
That actually leads me to another question. You mentioned that there are limitations to block-based programming languages and that to accomplish certain tasks, you have to step outside of them to text-based languages, say Python, in order to get things done. But could you foresee a future in which, for a certain subclass of students, block-based paradigms meet all their computing needs so that they could stay entirely within a block-based language and still get significant computational tasks accomplished?
Right. So I think that, again, maybe it will bring together that whole model-based idea that I was talking about at the beginning and the block-based programming. So I can certainly see domain-specific environments that are not necessarily a general-purpose programming language, because really these kinds of languages, you can write small programs, few hundred blocks, maybe 1,000 blocks, but beyond that, it becomes unmanageable, right? And just like today, for example, I teach MATLAB, as I mentioned, so that's a full-fledged programming language and this text-based programming language, yet it's not general purpose in the sense that nobody is writing operating systems or word processors in MATLAB. That's for very specific scientific computing, numerical computing, and signal processing, and those kinds of applications. And it's great, and you can write a few thousand line codes in MATLAB, and it's really a wonderful tool, but it's not a general purpose programming language. So I can imagine these domain-specific environments that would stick to block-based programming, because it's simply easier to learn. So if your main job is not to write programs, but to do something else, work in the sciences or whatnot, and you find it difficult to learn a general-purpose programming language, these domain-specific environments specifically tailored for your domain could be the way of the future.
I guess you might look at a product like Tableau, for example, which allows you to do data visualization with a wonderful palette of features and doesn't require you to step into programming languages like R or Python when all you want to do is output an interactive visualization. And I can imagine that there would be tools like that in other domains that will allow you to stay within a block-based language and to get your work done. There are also tools like Blockly from Google, for example, that allow you to program in a visual style and then output textual programs in standard languages like JavaScript. Do you see a role for outputting textual programs from NetBlocks in a similar manner?
So I see Blockly as somewhat different than what Snap, Scratch, and NetBlocks is trying to do. So Blockly is more for for people who want to create tools like NetBlocks, right? We could have used Blockly instead of Snap, but Snap was much closer to what we wanted.
Okay.
And actually, in one of our projects, we created a molecular dynamics simulation front-end tool for chemical engineers. And one of the aspects of that tool was based on Blockly. So they could write these simulation scripts in a Blockly-based visual programming language. And so I think for those kinds of things, Blockly is great. For what we were trying to do, I think Snap was much better as a starting point.
Well, let's come back around to this this theme of computational thinking, because you know, if we're seeing greater adoption of these tools in the K through 12 arena, how do you think that will affect students coming into Vanderbilt? I mean, I think one of the things that you and I have talked about in other contexts is the unevenness of people's background in computational thinking and experience with programming languages when they arrive on campus, and how that maybe shapes their trajectories here. Can you talk a little bit about what you'd like to see? You mentioned you're volunteering in middle schools, I think, or elementary schools. How will this shape the kind of students that we're going to see, do you think?
That's a great question, and there is actually a nationwide movement to introduce more computer science into all kinds of schools, and I think that's great. And it's great not because we want everybody to become a computer science major, but basically most kinds of job these days, be in sciences, STEM, or even humanities or anywhere else, a lot of those jobs require some kind of basic knowledge of programming. So that's definitely an important consideration. On the other hand, these text-based languages still act as a barrier, in the sense that many kids find it really kind of scary to even take a class that's based on computer science and whatnot. So I think one other big advantage of these block-based languages is that they lower the barrier and make it more appealing to students who would otherwise not consider computer science or even just taking a computing course in general.
So as we wind up, we always ask our guests, because this is an educational podcast, what's their favorite analog educational technology?
Ooh. Analog educational technology. I never heard that expression actually in my life. I was considering saying drawing in general, but yeah, it's a tool. Yeah, the pen and the paper is probably still...
If we did a poll, that would be way out on top. So, well, thank you, Akash. This has been terrific, and we really appreciate your time.
All right, thank you so much for having me.
That was Akash Ladeshi, professor of computer engineering here at Vanderbilt University and lead developer of the graphical networked programming language NetBlocks. See the show notes for more information on NetBlocks, including information on how to get started using it. I'm really interested in one of the questions Cliff asked near the end of the interview about the growing emphasis on computer programming in K-12 settings. My younger daughter started learning to code in Scratch last year in third grade, and she's really loving her after-school robotics club this year in fourth grade. Now, she's choosing for more programming experiences by doing this after-school stuff, but I know that Scratch is a standard part of the curriculum at her elementary school and at others as well. I keep trying to imagine what she'll know about coding as a college freshman 8 years from now, compared to what I knew at the end of my college career as a computer science major. With more and more programming experiences in K-12 settings, it's likely that students will arrive on our campuses in the coming years with some perhaps significant skills in computer programming. How might that change the computer science curriculum? How might that change the curriculum in other disciplines? I'd love to hear your thoughts on these questions. You can find us on Twitter at LeadingLinesPod. And we're going to try this for the first time. You can send us a voicemail via email to leadinglinespod@vanderbilt.edu. I'd love to hear your thoughts on how K-12 programming experiences might change the curriculum at the college level. Leading Lines is produced by the Center for Teaching, the Vanderbilt Institute for Digital Learning, the Office of Scholarly Communications, and the Associate Provost for Digital Learning. This episode was edited by Rhett McDaniel. Look for new episodes the first and third Monday of each month, and you can find past episodes on our website, leadinglinespod.com. I'm your host, Derek Brough. Thanks for listening.